for those of you who were asking who's Greg, well, there he is. That is his employee photo from our website there, Greg Steinmetz with Guide Dog Wiki. Greg is the manager of admissions and graduate services, which means he is the go-to guy for assisting applicants through the application process, the admissions process. He's also the contact for continued support throughout their entire time as a working guide dog team. And so he's here to share with us sort of that process and sort of educate our audience on the client side of things. So, Greg, thank you so much for taking some time to be with us this afternoon. Welcome.
And thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
Yay, excellent. So let's just jump in and kind of kick it off. And if you would, maybe let's talk about the definition of legal blindness, which is one of the requirements to get a guide dog. And I think a lot of us tend to assume that to be blind and to use a guide dog maybe means that that person is experiencing like total darkness, but that's not always how it works, right? So maybe can you walk us through that?
Sure. That's actually a great question. A significant number of our graduates have some level of residual vision, whether it be some light perception all the way up to being able to read or count fingers at distance. So there's a wide range of or degree of vision loss that is experienced. For our program, all of our applicants have to have met the legal definition of blindness. And that is defined as either having a visual acuity of 20/200 or less in the better eye, or having a field of vision of 20 degrees or less. So you can qualify for one or both of those definitions. Field of vision would mean the amount of field that you are able to still see. So for someone like myself who has retinitis pigmentosa, it's tunnel vision. And so the degree of vision is centralized. And there are other restrictive types of field of vision loss, macular degeneration, that can qualify for that. So oftentimes we do have students who have you know some residual vision and can use that or help it enhance them with their guide dog training.
And visual acuity has to do with what you're able to see, like on the eye chart, right?
Exactly right. That's exactly right. So at least one eye has to be 20/200 or less, and then the other eye would have to be obviously be that or less. So I can't describe to you what level that is, but yes, in reading an eye chart, that's how they would define 20/200 or less.
Okay. Got it. And aside from being legally blind, what are some of the other requirements to receive a guide dog?
So we do have some minimum requirements. The first is that obviously legal blindness, but then all of our applicants have to be at least 18 years of age or older. We want to make sure that our guide dog users have the maturity to take on the responsibility of having a guide dog what is entailed. We want to make sure that they're the person caring for their guide dog and not a family member. So in our experience, we don't accept anyone under the age of 18. Additionally, we want to make sure that all of our applicants have had orientation and mobility training. And that is done by a certified orientation mobility specialist who has been educated to teach people who are blind or visually impaired how to use a mobility tool like a white cane and any remaining vision and other senses to safely navigate their environment. So orientation and mobility basically is knowing where you are in space and mobility, how to navigate that space safely. So all of our students have to be able to have demonstrated that they have sufficient orientation ability skills. We want to make sure that they're physically capable of working with a guide dog and attending class. So they have to be physically fit, be able to walk 1 to 2 miles a day, have the upper body strength to manage their guide dogs while in harness. We also want to make sure that there's going to be sufficient work for a guide dog. Most of our dogs going out are going to be around 2 years of age when they graduate with their new partner. And they need both physical and mental exercise. And we want to make sure that when they go home, that they'll continue the learning and bonding process while working their dogs on a regular basis. So those are some of the primary requirements for our guide dog program. We also want to make sure that the graduates have the financial ability to support a guide dog once they graduate. Our program for our applicants is free of cost. We don't charge them anything for transportation, housing, the training, the guide dog, or our ongoing services. We also include veterinary services on campus for those students who are able to come back to campus for those services. But for those who aren't, we want to make sure that they can support their guide dog with obviously food and maintenance medications and any veterinary services once they go home.
Okay. And maybe tell us a little bit more about when we talk about there has to be enough work for the dog, how is that determined?
Oh, great question. So what we do is we ask the applicants, do they have 3 or 4 routes that they work on a regular basis? And a route is simply a place that they go on their own independently. So it could be an exercise route in the neighborhood. Perhaps they walk around the block several times. It could be to school. It could be to the bus stop or restaurants. Any place that the applicant is going on their own is considered a route. And we want to make sure that they have those routes in place and that they know them, because when they graduate with their guide dogs and go home, they're with us normally 3 weeks for training. And we want to make sure that when they go home that bonding and learning continues. And so getting out with the dogs on a regular basis, especially on a route that they already know, allows them to focus on their dog and their dog's behaviors as opposed to trying to figure out these routes while they're working with their guide dog. It becomes more challenging. So the dogs, they want to get out and work. And we find that if they don't go home and continue that daily workout, that dogs start offering some behaviors that may be unwanted. So we don't want the dogs to go home and start those bad behaviors. We want to set up our guide dog teams for success once they get home. So we want to make sure that they're able to get out regularly and independently, so that the bonding process goes on with their guide dogs. Okay. Oftentimes, yeah.
All right, that makes sense. Yeah, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Oftentimes.
Well, I was just going to say the importance of that is that oftentimes it takes several months for that team or that bond to really solidify, and if they don't go home and work, then it takes longer for that to happen. So we really want to encourage our graduates to continue that daily workout.
And when you say it takes time for the team to solidify, is that in the sense of like it's each member of the team kind of trying to figure out exactly how the other one works and sort of just learning a little bit more about each other or what?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. So 3 weeks, it seems like a long period of time, but it really isn't when you're in class. And it takes time to build that trust and rapport for both our guide dogs and ourselves to know how each is going to behave and react. For me, I remember with my current guide dog, it was probably about 6 or 7 months after we got home. And, when you have a new guide dog, you're focusing a lot on the mechanics of the guide work. And at some point, Wiki and I were walking together and she zigged and I zigged with her without thinking about. It was completely, you know, subconsciously. And I had to stop and think, oh my goodness, that's, you know, that's the aha moment. We, you know, we're in step, we're in sync. Mm-hmm. So it takes time to build that confidence in each other. Because your dog has to trust you just as much as you trust your guide dog.
Wow. That aha moment must be pretty amazing.
Yeah. I imagine that if people could see me, I had an ear to ear grin that day. Yeah.
Wow.
It's moving. It's emotional to really see, you know, how the team can work together effectively.
Wow. That's fantastic. And let's back up for just a second. When we talk about how applicants have to have successfully completed orientation and mobility training, tell us a little bit about, maybe expand on why that is so important, kind of the idea of, well, isn't it the dog's job to get you from point A to point B, or is that not really the case? So what, if we're looking at the individual jobs of both part of the team, tell us how the O&M training really impacts that.
Yeah, that's one of the most misunderstood or misconceptions about guide dogs. So we are a guide dog team, and the guide dog is there to get us from point to point safely. And as the handler, it's my job to know where I am, where I want to go, and how to get there and do that safely. So our guide dogs are trained to lead their human partners in a straight line concept until they get to an obstacle that they can't get around safely, or when they get to a curb. And then at that point, it's the handler's job to know why the dog is stopped, or at least be able to figure that out, and then what to do next. So oftentimes people think, well, the dog just comes to the street, to this, you know, that corner, and we'll stop and we'll wait, you know, for the light to change and then guide their partner across. It's actually the opposite. So that's where that orientation mobility comes in. An orientation mobility specialist would train someone who is blind or visually impaired how to use the sound of traffic to safely judge when it's safe to cross. And at that point, the guide dog handler would initiate a crossing with a command to their guide dog partner. And if it's safe, then the guide dog partner would lead them across the street. So it is a team, and it takes time to learn those skills. It can be challenging in different environments or in areas that are unknown to the guide dog handler, the traffic patterns. And that's something that's learned over time in training with that orientation mobility specialist. Mm-hmm. And again, the reason that's important is that when the guide dog handler, as I said, they have to know where they are and where they're going and how to get there. They have to be able to know how to plan the route, or more importantly, if their guide dog does lead them astray, that they realize that they're maybe not on the same line and how to get back to where they diverge from their route. Like I said, being able to judge traffic patterns. The dogs, you know, they're very smart, and after a time you can pattern them to a route. But sometimes they may anticipate a turn where you don't necessarily want to go that day. So orientation mobility is being aware of your environment and then trusting your dog to get you to those points.
Okay. So you really have to know how to get from point A to point B. That's not the dog's job. The dog's job is to make sure that you can do it safely.
Exactly. Unfortunately, the GDA hasn't found a way to implant GPS. So, you know, we have to rely on our own skills and, in knowing where we are, and, you know, things like finding the door to a business or things like that. You have to kind of know when you're in the general area so that you can start giving your dog, commands on finding that entrance. So Sure. It is a team, and those are all skills that you have to have in place. Because if we just came in and trained people and sent them home, they wouldn't know still how to cross the street. And again, they may become reliant on the dog's decision making. And
that makes sense.
For the dogs, the dogs part of it, they have to trust that we're not going to put them in in danger or at risk by initiating crossings when it's not safe. They are trained to avoid traffic, but if you start doing those kind of risky behaviors, the dogs start losing confidence in us as their handler. Mm-hmm. So it is a two-way street in the trust and confidence.
Wow, it's kind of given me the shivers thinking about what that bond and that relationship and just how much trust there has to be on both ends of the harness.
Yeah, you really do, put your life in their hands, every day. And, we hope that we never have to encounter or put those skills to work. But when it does happen, you certainly are aware and appreciative of having that extra sense of judgment, in keeping you safe.
Sure. All right. That was, thank you for going back and explaining that a little bit further.
Certainly.
That was helpful. So when it's determined that somebody meets all of the qualifications for a dog and they're starting their application, what does the application process entail? What's that process like?
Yeah, it starts with the applicants going either online to our guidedogsofamerica.org website and completing an online application, which gives us some general information, lifestyle, basic health information. We do request that the applicants, as part of their application submission, submit at least 3 personal references. And once we receive their application, we then send them some additional forms that they have to submit as part of their application. So all of our applicants have to have a form completed by their primary care physician, and that goes into detail about their overall health and any specific chronic health concerns. We also require an ophthalmologist report that documents their vision loss and any residual vision. And then we also require a form to be completed by their most recent orientation and mobility specialist. And that helps us get an idea for their skill level and proficiency in independent travel. The fourth part of the application process would be either an in-home assessment or a video assessment. So once we have received all of their documentation, and we feel that they could be a good candidate, then we schedule an assessment with the applicant, with an instructor. So one of the GDA instructors will either go out to the applicant's home, if they live in our geographic area, and meet with them and kind of go over their application in more detail with them, discuss, some of the aspects of the training program. And then they'll actually go out and do a walk with the applicant and get a feel for their ability to travel independently using their cane. And then on the return from that walk, the instructors do a Juno walk with the applicant. And a Juno walk is where the instructor will use a guide dog harness handle, and they get to pretend that they're a guide dog. And then the applicant holds the other end. And it allows the instructor to assess some of the attributes that they would look for in a guide dog for that individual. So they would lead them and kind of explain how a guide dog will work. And it allows them to gauge what a comfortable pace for the applicant is, what type of pull that they would be comfortable with from a guide dog. And then it also gives them an opportunity to assess things like, does the applicant, can they feel or judge maybe when they're getting offline? So it's a valuable tool in determining if someone would be a good guide dog handler. Okay. If we're not able to do that in-home assessment, then we ask the students or the applicants, to submit in a video. We give them instructions, and they basically do the same thing. They'll give us a kind of a introductory video. Hello, my name is, and answer some questions on camera for us. And then they'll go out and do a mobility video where someone would walk behind them, recording them doing that same kind of route but just without the Juno part of it. Once we have them upload that, then we have a selection committee that reviews those applications and then determine if we have the ability to accept them for training in our program.
Okay, perfect. Now, I couldn't help but notice that you talked about one of the things that the instructors are looking for during that interview process or during that Juno walk is the amount of pull that the applicant might be comfortable with. So you mean to tell us that we help puppy raisers teach the dogs not to pull on a leash, and then as guide dogs, they have to pull?
Yeah, that's definitely it. So in wild dogs are working in harness. If you haven't seen a harness before, it's a leather body that slips over the dog's head. It does have a chest strap, and then it has kind of a strap that goes over the back shoulders and then buckles underneath the belly. Through that is attached a handle that is the interface between the guide dog handler and the dog. And the dogs will actually pull against that harness, that tension, and lead their guide dog handler. So there's actually a bit of a pull. The dog is actually pulling us through space. And some people prefer a really strong pull, and it gives them more feedback from their dog. And some people, maybe due to physical abilities, aren't able to have as much pull. So we have to be able to evaluate what is comfortable for that particular applicant.
Okay.
So yeah, that unfortunately, they have to do a little bit of pulling.
All right. Well, we will still, as puppy raisers, we will still work on nice, polite leash walking because, of course, that remains important, right? They're not always operating under that harness handle when they're working.
Exactly,
guides.
Yeah, right. When we take them out to relieve, our dogs are on leash and they still have to be behaved and be good citizens. So, good leash training is really important for those times where our dogs are not guiding us.
Yeah. Okay. So let's fast forward a little bit and someone's through the application process. It's been determined that they're a good candidate. They've been accepted into the program. They get to campus. Walk us a little bit through how the 21-day residential training program is structured.
Sure. So yeah, we do have a 21-day residential program. And each class is typically 10 students per class with 3 instructors. Students all come in on a Sunday, and again, we arrange their transportation to and from campus. If they live locally, then they can be dropped off at the dorm. The first day is spent orienting them to the dormitory. So an instructor will meet them, take them to their room, describe the room and what amenities are in it. And then we leave the students to get to know their rooms and the dormitory. The next day, Monday, is the first day of work, and we start early in the morning. Our days always start at 6 a.m., and the students on the first Monday and Tuesday will get a lecture in the morning and then go out individually with an instructor and learn the basic route where they'll be spending most of their time, especially the first week, practicing with their guide dogs. So that allows us to spend 2 full days getting to know those students individually and what type of guide dog would be the best match. So students get up at 6 and breakfast would be at 7 a.m. Lecture is at 8 a.m. Typically, they will load up into our class vehicles at 9 a.m. and spend the day out until about 11:15 or 11:30. Lunch is served at noon, and then we kind of start the process all over again at 1 o'clock. There's typically a short lecture. They load up the vehicles, go back out, work another workout in the afternoon, and come back to campus typically about 4 p.m. Dinner would be at 5. And then from time to time, there may be an evening lecture or an evening route with the instructors. So the first 2 days are actually done without their guide dogs being assigned to them. And again, that gives the instructors one-on-one time to really get to know their students. It also allows the students to learn the basic route so that when they do get their guide dogs assigned, that they're spending less time trying to remember where they're supposed to be going or where the different obstacles might be on that route. Wednesday is a very special day on campus. It's dog day. So Wednesday morning, students will have one more Juno session with an instructor. Pardon me. And then come back to campus and have lunch. Typically, it's pretty quiet and subdued at lunch because everyone's anxious to get back to their room. And then in the afternoon, one by one, the instructors will bring the newly assigned guide dogs up to each individual in their room and introduce them for the first time with their new guide dog partners. I can tell you from experience, it's a really emotional time. And it's different every single time you get a guide dog partner. So whether you've had several or it's your first, it's always emotional. And the students are given time to kind of spend on the floor getting to know their new partners. And then right away, we take them out in their first route. Typically, it's just a straight line walk so that they can get used to the feel of working with a guide dog. And then from Wednesday on, they spend 24/7 with their guide dog partners, caring for and working with them. Again, from 6 a.m. until usually about 7 p.m. So it's a long, strenuous day for those 3 weeks.
Wow.
During that time, they're learning the basics of guide work. And that's left turns, right turns, street crossings. For some people who've never even had a dog, let alone a guide dog, we have to teach them how to care for their dog. So feeding, watering, relieving their guide dog, grooming. All those sort of things that they have to know to work with a dog. During the second week, we're spending a lot of time doing some more advanced work. We also start doing indoor work. So we take our students either to the mall or a store and teach them how their dogs will behave, perhaps on stairs or elevators or escalators, how they should work indoors or in a store. We are also doing a little bit heavier pedestrian traffic and street traffic. And we also do platform training so that the students understand how their dogs will behave, perhaps on a train platform or on the subway. They'll experience a night route because oftentimes our dogs are a little bit more alert at night. And so we want them to experience that while they're in class. We're also doing sidewalkless travel. So a great number of our students are actually live in a rural area where they don't have sidewalks, and we have to teach them the proper technique for working with their dogs on those types of routes. In addition, we will take them to a restaurant and treat them to lunch so that they can learn how their dogs are supposed to behave under the table. And, at the end of the 3 weeks, we hold graduation, and for many of our puppy raisers, they know how emotional and gratifying that can be. It's a celebration of the hard work of both the students, the dogs, and our puppy raiser, our staff, getting that team to that point. And then after graduation, our students get to leave and begin their new journey.
Wow. That is a big day, graduation. That brings on all the feels.
It is a long day.
Yeah.
And it's stressful. You know, it's you're being away from home, and you are with, you know, a group of other people from various different walks of life and age groups and experiences. So it can be, you know, it can be quite a challenge living in a group environment for that period of time.
Sure. So maybe help us understand a little bit more about some of the skills that the dogs are taught. I mean, I think, you know, finding curbs, that one's, mm-hmm. you know, pretty obvious. You mentioned mm-hmm. maybe finding doors. Is it obstacles? Is it overhead obstacles versus like the trash can that's blocking the sidewalk? What are some of the different things the dogs are taught that help keep the team safe?
Sure. So I like to kind of talk about it in terms of, you know, people often ask, you know, why should I get a guide dog? Why wouldn't I just use my cane? And there certainly are pros and cons for both. But I've never found a cane that can do things like you were talking about, you know, finding an overhead obstruction. So maybe a tree branch or an awning. And a guide dog is a proactive mobility tool. So whereas you're using your white cane and you have to tap around and find those things in your environment and then figure out what to do with them, our guide dogs are assessing all those things and making decisions long before we encounter them. So, for instance, if there's someone on a bicycle or a skateboard coming towards us, we may not hear them, but the guide dogs have seen them and are starting to make decisions on what to do about getting us safely around those. In places like at the mall or going to a store, you know, a cane won't detect or find an entrance. So the dogs are taught commands like find the elevator or find the escalator or find the door. For instance, when Wiki and I go to the pharmacy, usually they're in the pharmacies, for instance, are in the back of stores generally. So I can tell her, hey, find the counter, and she'll go find the counter in the back of the store. Wow. So those are all things that you know she can do that my cane can't. You know, I can tell her, let's get in line, and she'll take me to the back of the line most of the time. But I don't have to whack people in the shins with my cane trying to figure out where I'm at, you know, in a store. So, yeah, we do teach the dogs things like find a chair or find the escalator, find the door. They have to be able to see those things most of the time. So, you know, if you go into a department store, for instance, usually the elevators are kind of hidden in a hallway. So you couldn't just tell Wiki, you know, find the elevator. But if we were in the general vicinity where she could see or maybe hear it, she could definitely find it. But if we're in the center of a mall and they have an elevator and she could see it, she can take me to it. And she's very good about remembering, like if you go, for instance, into the mall and you go in through a department store and then you go into the mall, finding your way back can be a challenge. So I've had times where I told her, you know, find outside and she'll take us right back out to the door we came in, even though it's having to go through that same department store. Pardon me. So those are, you know, those are things that the dogs do for us that a cane could never do. And, you know, having to get up in the middle of the night when your dog is sick or, you know, picking up after your dog, those are minor things in comparison to the benefits that the guide dogs can do for us in their role as a guide.
Sure. I would think, plus just the whole companionship. I mean, your cane is nowhere near as good company, and you can't, when you pet your cane, it's just not as soft.
Well, as my good friend Tom Olzek always says, no one ever came up and asked me about my cane or so what a pretty cane you have. So I can tell you that my experience is that, you know, people are generally and genuinely interested in guide dogs and service dogs in general. I can't count the number of times people come up and told me about their dogs and how much they love their dogs and how wonderful it is to see, you know, people being independent. And so it's a great way. It's a, you know, it's a social icebreaker. And sure. When you are visually impaired, you know, a lot of language is nonverbal. It's body language. It's eye contact. And so you don't realize maybe sometimes, you know, people are showing an interest or maybe even speaking to you. So it certainly helps, you know, break the ice in starting conversations.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I have a couple more questions, and then I don't want to dominate so much of the time that we're not able to get to our audience Q&A. But I'm just curious, so after the team graduates, I know that we provide all types of support. Maybe tell us quickly a little bit about that. So how do we continue to support the team once they've left campus, particularly if they live out of state and we're not able to see them regularly because they're, you know, maybe not coming onto campus for vet visits and things like that. What are some of the ways that we continue to support the teams?
So once a team graduates, then our graduate services take over. Can you still hear me? Okay. So graduate services is there to support our teams through the life of their guide dog in service. So, for instance, when the guide dog teams go home, their instructors will follow up with them on a regular basis, check in and see how their team is progressing. And then our staff are always available to our graduates. So if they should go home and encounter perhaps unwanted behaviors, or maybe they have access or etiquette issues, they can give us a call, and I can direct them to the appropriate person that can assist them. So whether it's something I can assist them with, or perhaps they need an instructor's intervention. But we provide that service to our graduates, and oftentimes it's something that we can handle over the phone. So perhaps it's giving the graduates some useful skills or techniques to try with their guide dog partners. Maybe it's helping them better understand what the guide dog may be behaviors they may be presenting and why they may be doing that, doing some troubleshooting. And oftentimes we can work with using technology to assist us. So maybe it's doing a video call, or having them send us video. I can remember a time with my previous guide dog where I was having a lot of trouble at a specific intersection. I had called GDA, and an instructor had actually gone on to Google Earth, and within a minute or two of looking at the intersection online, he told me exactly what the problem was, and we solved it and understood it and never had a problem there again. So we try to resolve as many issues as we can remotely. But if there's something that does require our attention, if there's a safety issue, that instructor will travel to our graduates and assess and see what's going on in their home area. Because sometimes that's the only thing that can help resolve some issues. So, and that's, you know, throughout the life of the dog. So if they, you know, need assistance in obtaining medications, or they have questions about, you know, they went into a restaurant and they weren't allowed to bring their guide dog, they were told. So those are all things that our graduate services department is there to support them with. And as I said earlier, we provide additional veterinary care to our graduates on campus. We do provide boarding services. So our graduates, if they're going on vacation and don't want to take their guide dog partners with them, they can board them on campus free of cost. And my favorite is free grooming. So if Wiki needs a bath, we're always glad on campus to provide grooming and nail care for our guide dog partners.
Nice.
On campus, yeah.
Excellent. Now, have you been hearing from graduates? So during the pandemic and the world is all sideways and we're physical distancing and sheltering in home, at home, have you been hearing from graduates recently? How are they... How's everybody coping with all this? And is there anything that we've been able to do maybe specifically to try to help get them through this particularly challenging time?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you, Stephanie. I have found that comments from our graduates have expressed that being at home during the COVID-19 crisis has increased their feelings of isolation and anxiety. You can imagine that. Being visually impaired offers a lot of challenges for things like transportation, access to information. So they feel oftentimes more isolated. And we decided to kind of reach out to our graduates in a proactive manner. So I developed a weekly conference call or check-in with our graduates. It allows them to connect with each other and people who may be experiencing some of the same issues. So we've done a weekly call with all of our graduates are invited to attend. And we've covered a lot of different topics, including proactive veterinary care, you know, good practices, best practices for sheltering in place, and things, you know, like everybody else, washing your hands and social distancing. We've had some just general hangouts where we've allowed kind of all of our graduates kind of share their experiences, what's going on, and just, you know, in a comfortable environment. So each week we try to have kind of a different topic, sometimes guide dog related, sometimes just general information. We had these schools, which offers distance learning for people who are blind or visually impaired. They did a presentation so that we can give graduates some options of things to do while they're at home and make, you know, make use of that time and keep them occupied and active. And it's been very well received. So we're looking forward to continuing that on a regular basis. And then as graduate services, I've been reaching out to our graduates individually and calling them and checking in on them and making sure that they have what they need. But for the most part, we've had, you know, a lot of good feedback from our graduates that they're doing well. But as just as everybody else is ready for this to kind of resolve itself.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I'm glad that, you know, people have, that we've been able to facilitate that opportunity for people to stay connected as alumni or as graduates, and also that we're able to touch base and just offer that extra support. That's important.
Yeah. You know, I've always felt, even before I became an employee at GDA, that it was a family and a community. I've been fortunate to be involved in several ways in fundraising and guest speaking and working with the puppy raiser group in Ventura and sometimes in Sylmar, and getting to know a lot of the different people in our family. And that's the kind of feeling that I hope that you know, we can share with our graduates, at least, is that we are a family. We care about every graduate individually, and you know, want them to be successful with their guide dog partners.
Yeah.
So I just want to say, you know, how appreciative I am of all the people involved at GDA, whether it's staff, our puppy raisers, our volunteers. You know, it really does. It's kind of cliche to keep saying it takes a village, but you know, we are a community, and can't do it without, you know, all the support of all the different parts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So one last question that I have, and then I do see we've got some stuff queuing up in the Q&A here. Since I know, or I see that we have an audience of mostly puppy raisers, let's talk a little bit about graduate puppy raiser communication. So those of you that are raising for the first time, you've probably already heard that when the guide dog graduates, we're going to introduce you to the recipient of the dog, the graduate. You're always encouraged to share contact information, but I mean, understandably, how much the individual graduate chooses to stay in contact is, of course, a deeply personal decision, and some of them choose to stay in contact more so than others. Greg, can you tell us a little bit about, just in your experience or in your opinion, what goes into that? Why is there such a range of degrees of comfort there?
Yeah, certainly. As the graduate services manager, I encourage our graduates to share as much information with their puppy raisers as they are comfortable in doing. As I've said, I've had three guide dogs from GDA and have valued the gifts that were given to me and the work and energy that goes into getting these dogs ready for college and giving them the foundation. So I've always been very respectful of the time and energy that our puppy raisers put in. But as a graduate, I also know how it feels to be on the other side of that. And sometimes, you know, our graduates can be somewhat private people. They don't like sharing. They feel sometimes anxious about people knowing about what's going on. They feel vulnerable. So there certainly are, you know, some aspects to that that come with being visually impaired, I think. And so they don't want to or feel uncomfortable sharing some of those aspects of their life. But we do encourage them to stay in touch if they're comfortable and share what they're willing to share. But we tell them that, you know, there's no obligation for them to do so. Again, we want to respect their wishes as well. I can tell you that for myself, the first time I had a guide dog, I was somewhat worried that my new guide dog would want to be with them more, or be more, less in love with me than they are with them. And so it was kind of a standoffish relationship for a while. And with my second guide dog, I was fortunate to work with him for a great number of years. And then he was able to retire and went back to his puppy raisers and lived out his golden years, and still friends with them to this day. We still talk and share even now, even after several years of him being gone. So my current guide dog, Wiki, and her puppy raisers, we have a wonderful relationship and share and stay in touch. And again, I'm able to see the amount of love and energy and attention that our puppies in training get. And I certainly want to encourage our graduates to share as much as they can, but respecting that amount of privacy that they may often seek.
Sure. Okay. That makes sense. Well, thank you for giving us a little more insight into that. Joining us this afternoon, we've got some questions that have been coming in. Carolyn, are you out there?
I am, and it's so funny. My little Nito just decided it was going to come into this room to vacuum. So, all right, Greg, I'm just going to kind of go through the questions real quick.
Sure.
So is there
we've got about 10 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 10 minutes. So we'll just buzz right through them, Greg. You know how quickly we can talk to each other.
I'll be brief.
So is there appropriate words when we're describing a guide dog and a graduate? So what is there appropriate terminology we should use? I should say a graduate and their guide dog, because I think one of them is, I just answered there. Go, Greg.
Yeah, so, we use a lot of terms, handler, guide dog user, graduate, client. I think any of those are acceptable terms, and our guide dog is our guide dog or guide dog partner.
Okay. I think that
I've got a tag on question to that. Is it ever, so I hear the phrase guide dog, and then I occasionally hear the phrase seeing eye dog, and there's a distinct difference, isn't there?
There is a distinct difference. Seeing eye dog, so the Seeing Eye is a guide dog school in New Jersey, and I believe they were the first school in the United States. And when people got a guide dog, they were known as Seeing Eye dogs, being from the Seeing Eye. So the terms aren't synonymous. They've kind of become so in the lexicon, but a guide dog is a dog that's been specifically trained to guide a person who is blind or visually impaired. So all seeing eye dogs are guide dogs, but not all guide dogs are seeing eye guide dogs.
There you go. There's a guide dog fun fact for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just heard you say, too, a person with a visual impairment. So is that proper, too? I know Stephanie and I have these conversations often.
Yeah. So, I refer to as people who are blind or visually impaired because, again, there's differing levels of blindness. Some people have low vision who still have some usable vision. And so they may be technically legally blind, but don't see themselves as blind. So there is a term called low vision. I think you can certainly refer to people who are blind or visually impaired.
Gotcha. Cool. And then there's a couple of people that were wondering about doing sidewalkless routes and mm-hmm. where they walk in the road and just how they're taught to walk
that.
Down.
So like imagine, sidewalkless, there is a gutter or curb, but no sidewalk. That's sidewalkless travel. And the guide dogs are trained with their handlers so that the guide dog would be on the inside of the street. So between the handler and the curb is where your guide dog would be. So your dog should be on your left between you and the curb. And the dog will follow that line until it gets to the end of that block. In between that time, about every 10 or 15 feet, you'll give your dog a command to stop, turn towards the curb, make sure the curb is still there, continue down, do it, you know, keeping the process going until you find you're at your end of the block. Then you use your orientation mobility skills to listen for traffic, and then cross safely and continue down until you know, you found where the sidewalk may begin. So sidewalkless travel is basically following that curb edge, and then halting your dog and having them find that curb, so you know that you're still at the curbside and not in the middle of a street.
Gotcha. Would it be the same if it was like they're on like a grass path, so there's not really like an elevation change?
Yeah. So, you know, the dogs are taught to kind of follow a line. So if you imagine that you're on a field and there's no path in the field, your dog really doesn't know where you want them to go. So they have a little bit harder time knowing, you know, what to do for you. We do encourage our graduates to always have a cane with them, because there are times when a cane is a better tool for a certain situation. So they may put their harness handle down and then use their cane to, you know, find their way from there. So there's no real skill or technique taught. You can certainly probably pattern your dog for a certain target once you're in that field. But, you know, without a real clear understanding of it yourself, you would struggle.
Gotcha. And when you say put the harness handle down, that's the point where the dog is no longer guiding you and you're kind
exactly.
of taking the reins, I guess, so to speak.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, whenever we're working our dogs, you know, we are holding on to that harness handle. And then as soon as we put that harness handle down, that's their cue. Hey, you're not guiding me at this point. And then it's up to me to, you know, to, like I said, to take my cane out. Maybe I just need to stop for a minute and figure something out. So you put your harness handle down. The dogs can relax a little bit, and you can usually put them in a sit and stay so that you can, you know, continue what you need to do.
Gotcha. And then when a graduate's going to like a new place, like let's say there's, you know, they're leaving Southern California and that they're going to Minnesota, mm-hmm. and it's December, or they're going to Las Vegas, how do they handle new situations that are kind of maybe a lot different from what they're used to?
So what we try to do for instance, people who are going to a colder climate, we try to get them into a class where they'll be able to go home and continue working for a period of time. So we probably wouldn't bring someone into class who, for instance, may live in Minnesota in December. We may bring them in the spring or summer, maybe even fall, where we know that they're going to have some time to go home and continue that process we talked about earlier. The dogs adjust very well to different environments. You know, our dogs are going home, you know, all across the country in Canada. So they transition well. You know, they're like us. They may not enjoy Phoenix in summer, but just like us, we kind of change our routine to accommodate those conditions.
Gotcha. Great. Thank you for answering that. So with the GDA dogs, is the graduate, do they actually own the dog and the harness, or can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So GDA's policy on ownership, and it varies from school to school, but our policy was developed several years ago to be kind of in line with, at the time, California had its own guide dog board through the Consumer Affairs. We were the only state that had its own governing body. And their recommendation was that the school should retain ownership for the first year after graduation. And then at that point, ownership can be transferred to the handler. And the reasoning was that if there was going to be a safety issue, it was probably going to occur in that first year, at least be noticed during that first year. And so it allowed the guide dog schools to, you know, have a little bit more say in you know, whether a dog and a team are safe together. So our policy has remained that 1 year after graduation, the graduates can request transfer of ownership. And at that point, they own the dog from then on out. As far as our guide dog harnesses, the harnesses are the property of the guide dog school and would need to be returned upon retirement of a guide dog. And we just touch briefly on retirement because that's probably something as well. So that the guide dogs hopefully will work 6 to 8 years. That's our target goal. And then after retirement, then the guide dog handler gets to decide the disposition of their guide dog.
Cool. So they can adopt the dog if they.
Right. They can retain ownership if they choose. Absolutely. Gotcha. It sometimes can be a challenge. Because technically the dog is not a service animal at that point. And does that violate the ADA? You know, can they be charged for security deposits, things like that? Sometimes graduates are on fixed incomes, and can't afford, two guide dogs or two dogs. So, there's many factors that go into that, but,
gotcha. Cool. So one final thing, since there is a lot of puppy raisers on the call, is there something, I know when we had our area leader or area monthly meeting, I think there was a theme with recalls, like having a good recall. Mm-hmm. Is there something that you feel like puppy raisers can work on to make sure that behavior doesn't, they don't get a call after they're with their graduate, or you don't get a call saying, my dog's not doing this?
Yeah. I really feel that that's the number one thing that our guide dogs need to be able to do. Pardon me. It is have a strong recall. For those graduates who, have a home and a fenced yard, if they can't count on their dog to come to them when they call, it can be difficult to get to them. Even, coming up close and knowing where the dog is so you can harness them up. So that recall, they really have to be strong on that and come back, when they're called, because it's frustrating and can be a safety issue if you have to kind of navigate your yard trying to find your guide dog. So I think that for, at least from a guide dog handler's perspective, that's, probably one of the most important things that they would learn as a puppy.
Cool. All right. Well, that's all the questions I have. It's, I don't know, depending on what, it's either 5:04 or 5:07, depending on what clock I'm looking at. So I think, Stephanie, should I stop sharing my screen and we can...
Sure, we can pop back in and wave goodbye to everybody.
Yeah, if I can just close by saying again, I've had three wonderful guide dogs since about 2004, and really appreciate all that the puppy raisers do to get these dogs ready for their careers as guide dogs. And it's been so important to me and my family that we've had puppy raisers, my brothers and parents, and how much it means to me and to my family. What our puppy raisers do, what our volunteers do, what our staff does, it really changes a person's life. And I really hope that I'm able to get that across, how much we as our graduates value our partnerships with our guide dogs, and by extension, how much we value the puppy raisers. So thank you all for what you do.